Greetings and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests or those experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. We've got a number of services that are available through our organization Toward the Light, including near-death studies and support, psychic, spiritual motivation, and grief counseling, and also Reiki remote healing, and near-death experience books and DVDs, and other goods and services for body, mind, and spirit. For more information about that, please visit towardthelight.org. We welcome callers to call in to make comments or ask questions during the show. During the latter half of this hour, we will invite people to call in. This week, I am very pleased to have a fellow near-death experiencer, and we are going to be talking about prophetic near-death experiences. Welcome to the show, Greg Sola. Welcome, Greg. How are you?
Very good, thank you, and thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you with us, and I'm so pleased to learn more about the project that you are working on, which I think is very exciting because I, for one, have had prophetic near-death experiences. So you are actually currently writing a book on prophetic NDEs and getting information from other people who have had prophetic near-death experiences. Go ahead and tell us about this project a bit, if you will.
Sure. It started back when I had my own prophetic near-death experience back in, I believe it was 1994. And during that experience, I should probably start off by saying why I had my near-death experience. I had become extremely depressed. In fact, I had become suicidal, and I had decided I was going to commit suicide, and I had been planning it out for quite a while and trying to work up the courage to do it when I finally just decided I had reached the end. I was so depressed, so tired of living that I figured that tomorrow I was going to do it, and I had planned it all out. I had a gun, and I was going to shoot myself, and that night when I went to bed, I felt like there was presence in the room. I opened my eyes and saw at the foot of the bed three beings, and it was as if they were just the outline of the figures. They were very indistinct. There was no features to them, and where their bodies should have been, it was totally black. In fact, I got a sense of it being just a void, a blackest black that you can imagine, a nothingness that just where their bodies would be, it was like they punched a hole through this void. And just on the outside of their bodies, there was a faint white light. But the light was like a living light. And at first, at the time, I was an atheist. I didn't really know what to make of what was happening. And I kind of figured it was a dream and would just kind of go away real quickly. And my wife, who was working upstairs on the computer, I could hear her working away still because I was alone in the bed at the time. And but they remained there, and I, for a moment, I thought, well, maybe somebody had actually broken into the house and somebody was playing a trick on me. And I began to panic, and at that point, they began to radiate this incredible unconditional love towards me. And I, at that moment, I kind of realized that the love I was feeling, this unconditional love, was a true energy. It was a force. That love really is a force. It's not just an idea or an ideal. It really is an energy. And that this love that they were rating, this unconditional love, the power that it had, it was purely creative power as opposed to other types of energy. This that love, unconditional love, could only create. In fact, it was the same force that we call life. In fact, I kind of saw or felt this unconditional love as if it was the opposite side of the coin of what we call life, that life and love were really the different sides of the same coin. They were so related, so interchangeable. And in that moment, then I can't quite remember. I think I looked away or something. But when I look back, that the beings were gone and I was alone in the room, and just sort of left alone with my thoughts at this point. And I began to question whether or not I was going crazy, whether the stress or this depression was causing me to actually see things and disassociate. And something made me think, and I had read something earlier in the day that had got me thinking about sort of the future of humanity, and, you know, if there really was a God, you know, why would he have allowed so much suffering to take place in the past, and what all this meant for the future, and for my future in particular. Did I need to rebuild my belief system to include that God really did exist? Like I said, I was an atheist at the time, and I really didn't know what to do with all this information, and I didn't know what to do with this experience of seeing these beings at the bottom of my bed. And suddenly I had this real, I just knew there was an empathy I just had a sudden knowingness that something was going to really transform the world, that there was going to be a big event, that there was going to be a transformational experience for the world that would change everything. And I also knew it was sort of, I got a sense of it being a rebirthing. And from that, I kind of got also another sense that this transition was going to be a difficult transition. And I began to think that, well, again, why would this happen? Why? I got a sense that a lot of people were going to die or pass away and pass on, I should say. And that it got me thinking about, well, why would God do this? And the minute I had that thought, a voice spoke to me, and it was the voice like no other. Like you can't, it was beyond anything I could have ever have imagined. And it spoke to me, and it said, gather to you those who you would save. And in that moment, I knew, it was like every cell in my body knew that this was the voice of my Creator, that this was the voice of God, that God really did exist. But it wasn't a command, and it wasn't about ego. It was just saying, it was sort of like a suggestion, and it was a response to that thought I had about why would God allow so much suffering to take place? And it was a suggestion saying, listen, if you don't like what's going to happen, or if you don't like what's going to happen, why don't you step in and do something about it? And I think it was sort of a message that we all get in a way, saying, if we don't like the way, if we don't like to see the suffering that happens in the world today, why don't we just step up and do something about it? And so that was the seed of my experience right in that one spot. But what happened was is that the next morning, I woke up, and there's a lot of things that were going on, but the major thing that I felt was I was going through a major kundalini experience, which I had no idea what a kundalini experience was, but what this did was it seemed to open up a spiritual and psychic sight that I could then, from that point on, use to sort of answer questions that came to me. And so as I began rebuilding my belief system around this initial experience that I had, if I asked a question, somehow, some way, an answer would come to me. And so one of the questions I asked was, I wanted more information about this future that I had sort of had an inkling of, I had a glimpse of in the night before. And this is what led me to the major prophetic vision that I had. And this happened probably the second night after my initial near-death experience.
Was that the near-death experience that you were just describing?
I had this conversation where the beings came and radiated this love towards me, and I call it my preemptive near-death experience, because it completely changed. At the time that I had this experience, I was feeling like a victim. I was feeling very depressed. I really didn't, I didn't believe in God, so I had no spiritual connection there. And when all of this happened, I found myself suddenly having to rethink, you know, my existence in the world. And in a way, it gave me a purpose. I suddenly felt as if with God speaking to me and sort of giving me, I guess you could say, it's like giving me a job. He was saying, okay, if you want to do this, take this task, this is what you have to do for the future. Instead of committing suicide, do this instead. And that's the way I felt after my experience. It was almost like I was given a second chance. I think I could have, had I not had that experience, I certainly would be dead right now. I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit, and I'm moving a little fast because I wanted to get right to the experience itself. which was that I believe it was the second night after my near-death experience, I had an out-of-body experience where I was suddenly flying along with an airplane. It was a large white airplane. And as I moved along with this airplane, I was not seeing the vision from outside it. I was literally in the vision. I got a sense of sort of the story of where, what happened, what all had happened to come to this moment in time. And I knew at that instant that some terrorists had stolen this airplane and that they were going to use it as a bomb to attack a city. And I had a strong sense that it was a city in the United States and that I knew a lot of people were going to die. And in a moment after it must have been maybe 30 seconds that I was following along with this airplane, I must have stepped back from the actual plane itself for just a second, because I remember seeing an enormous orange fireball. And then from that point on, I knew that, again, a lot of people had died in this terrorist attack, and I could actually see the souls of people going and receding away from me, and I assumed they were going to heaven at this point. And so as I watched this, they were, again, it came the same kind of, they were made of light, and it was the same kind of light that I had seen earlier the two nights before that outlined the three beings of love that were standing at the foot of my bed. It was that living light, and it was the most incredible, beautiful light I had, or vision I had ever seen. And so after they had receded away and moved away from me, there was a God who came to me again and said that this was the result of a terrorist attack. And so I was sort of questioning, well, I think my thought was, did this have to happen, or was what had caused all this to happen? And I began to get a sense of this was going to be a central and very important event in human history, because not only the fact that many people were going to die, but that it was going to be sort of a pivot point in our history. And from there on, we would be given sort of a choice. If we chose to respond to this event in fear, I was given the idea that that we would end up actually creating the very thing that we feared. But the option that we had was, if we respond to this event with unconditional love and forgiveness, that would then take us down a road that would be a much brighter future and a much better future for us. And as God put it to me, he said, it was something like, terrorism is fear expressed, and that you can't fight fear with more fear. You had to fight fear with unconditional love, because fighting fear with more fear was almost like taking fuel and throwing it on a fire and expecting the fire to go out. You just fuel the fire and make it go burn even hotter. And so I think this pretty much sums up exactly what's happened after 9/11. Unfortunately, our government and the governments around the world and many people have responded in fear. And I think the invasion of Afghanistan and the invasion of Iraq and all of the things that have happened, particularly erosion of our own rights and the constitutional rights here in the United States since 9/11, are direct result of us acting out of fear. And in a very real sense, I think I could see what God was saying. We've actually created more terrorists rather than fewer. So that brought me to, I guess this brought me up to the point now where I've seen the 9/11 events, but there were other visions that came directly after that. And these I was not a part of, but I viewed them almost like a bystander, or like they were I was in a movie theater and I was watching the events. And I'll skip to the last one, because I think it sort of sums up everything that came before it, in that the very last event that I saw was a group of people, and it was in the street. I knew it was in an American street. It was some kind of a suburb, typical American suburb, and cars and garbage and so forth was piled up at the end of this road. And I had a real strong sense that people were living in fear, and that basically what had happened was that the whole economy of the United States had collapsed, because we had been living beyond our means. The government had been misspending the money. I also knew at that point from my experience that what had happened was is that there were I had a real strong sense of the Earth taking on far much more energy than it was designed to absorb, and that it responded by having the weather turn crazy, and the weather patterns in the environment particularly affected the United States in a way that even because we were misspending money on a personal level and the government was misspending money and misusing its money, that when these natural disasters and natural events became very expensive to deal with, that that was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back and threw our government into bankruptcy. And what had happened after that was then a complete collapse of the whole infrastructure of our country, which left people basically to deal with things on their own. And so, like this last vision, small groups of people had come together basically for survival. But it was made very clear to me that this was only one probable future, that one possible future. I think that there is another future that we could choose, but it would require us to change our thinking. And the one thing that we would have to change, the single thought that we would have to change this future, was that we would need to understand that humanity is literally one with one another, that as a group, what we do to another, we do to ourselves, and the planet is the same. What we do to our planet, we do to ourselves. And what if we help another person, we help ourselves. And I think if a majority of people on this planet just came to understand this one simple idea, that would be enough to change our future drastically. And we would have a future, literally, where we would be beginning to create heaven on Earth. The future we're creating right now is literally a hell on Earth. So that's the message that I was given to share with people. And just to let them know, it's like a roadmap that we're on the wrong road right now, but that we have an opportunity to get off of this road, get onto a different road, and end up in a different destination.
Well, you're making such a powerful and important point. In fact, I've shared that a lot when I've been speaking with people. It's so important to act from a place of love, because love and fear are two entirely different things. They're entirely different frequencies. And I said verbatim exactly the same thing. If you respond in fear, then you're just being no different from the perpetrators of this violence and these negative energies that are dominating the earth plane at this time. And I think that's why so many of us in NDEs who have had prophetic NDEs have been given these messages and sent back to share them in a very, very loving way, certainly not in a dogmatic way, so that people can get that indeed there is another option. There is another path that we can go down. And you are so right. We need to regard everyone and everything with love, even when it's utterly despicable in our eyes, because love is what's going to raise the frequency and heal.
Exactly.
Not fear.
And I could share something. I mean, here's something that God told me, and I've written this down for the book that I'm writing, and I think maybe it's a good point to share this idea about we have an opportunity to create our own futures. And that was something I think, too, I should mention, that prophecy is given to people. It isn't an indication that something has to happen. Its prophecy is given, I believe, very strongly, as like I mentioned, like a roadmap to show us that, and it's an affirmation of free will to let us know that we can. The prophecy doesn't have to come true. It just is sort of saying, okay, if you keep acting or if you keep believing in this way or if you keep acting out of fear, this is where you're going to end up with. But I think God gives us these little nudges to push us in a direction, I think, and to keep encouraging us to act out of love. And here's what God told me, and I'll read, this is a direct quote, and this is God speaking. He said, like I said to you before, you have the power to create whatever future you prefer. You can build a future based on the idea that you are separate from one another in the planet, or you can build your future on the idea that you are physically, emotionally, and spiritually connected to the people in the world around you. if you choose to believe that you are separate from each other and separate from the planet you live on, then you will create a future that reflects that belief. Your world will become a perfect environment for wars and famine. Your economies will reflect this belief by becoming a source of immense wealth for a few people, while billions of people lack adequate food or housing. And your environment will suffer because you believe that you can act with impunity and pollute the soil, air, and the water without consequences to yourself. And so I think what it does is affirm, too, the fact that this is an opportunity for us to change. And again, I have to say, going back to this idea of one simple thought, one idea will cause the whole everything to shift in a minute. And so that's really the purpose, I think, of the book, too, is I'm trying to reach out to people, let them know that not to be afraid of anything. That's certainly the last thing I want to do, is to encourage more fear. I think I'd like to encourage people to think positively and to move towards working towards a future in which we literally are creating heaven on earth. But it's not going to happen unless people, you know, take an active role. I think life rewards action. And so that's the other part of it. A lot of people need to get involved and to make this happen. I think the message has to get out. And anybody who feels the same way, I would encourage people to speak to everybody and to let people know about this, because it's not meant to be a secret. And I think the time has come when we literally are at a point where we need to remind each other that we're spiritual beings, that we are powerful spiritual beings, and that we have the ability to create a future. We don't have to be victims in this. And so, again, I would encourage people to share this information.
Well, I've also shared that with a certain part of my big transcendent near-death experience that I had in the mid-70s. And one of the things that I learned during my NDE was that we co-create with Source.
Exactly.
And that was so powerful to go through that, because I was feeling really, really humble. And then I realized, as I was being asked to do things and to help make decisions which would affect the outcome of people's lives and, other beings and planets and what have you, I thought, oh, goodness me, you know, that is a very huge responsibility. And I was thinking, well, what if I'm not able to do everything that I need to do? And I was also reassured that things were still being taken care of. But the point is that we do co-create with Source. We don't just sit here. We are active participants.
And it's interesting that you, it's interesting that you bring that up, because in the day after I had the visions of 9/11 and the other visions, I had an experience which what I called in the experiencing the Garden of Desire, where I had been in an out-of-body experience and actually was in a, I guess you call it not a place, but a space. And this Garden of Desire, it had nothing to do with looking like a garden, but I call it the Garden of Desire because it was a place or a space where everyone's desires and intentions came together. And I could see that it was like a garden in the sense that it was incredibly complex. It was incredibly synergistic in that everything, like a garden, you need the right amount of water and light, and the bacteria have to be working with the plants, and the nutrients had to be right in the soil for everything. Incredibly complex, but everything was interdependent upon, the success of the garden is interdependent upon everything working right. And I could see that this was sort of the same exact process that was taking place with everybody. It's like a giant internet chat room, in a sense. Everybody pouring their intentions and desires together. And out of this came a co-creation of our experiences. It's like this idea of what Carl Jung called synchronicity, where a person, a friend of yours, might call just out of the blue, just when you might need that phone call to cheer you up. Or there's always what amazed me in watching this process, watching this garden at work, was that not only did it function at any level to create our experience, but that it functioned perfectly. I could see, and watching it, that everybody was getting the exact experience that they wanted or desired out of life, that this garden, but again, like you had mentioned, it's a co-creation. It was a co-creation so that people were coming together and working together to create certain experiences or to create certain realities. Of course, God was there not judging any of this, but God was there simply to support it. God was the fertile ground in which all of this could take place. And it was important to note that he wasn't judging, or God say he or she, God simply wasn't judging what was going on. God was simply there to support it. It was us, humans, and coming together and co-creating our very experience of life. And it was fascinating to watch it. So anyway, yes, I would say that I would agree 100% with what you were saying about the co-creation.
Well, another thing, too, that, you know, because I'm a professional psychic and medium, and it doesn't matter if I'm predicting something that's going to happen on this planet or predicting something that's going to happen to an individual, I always make it a point to say, this is what it looks like could happen if the flow of energy keeps continuing in the same direction, but you could change your mind about it, too. So I give it the analogy of a cosmic weather report, and that things can also change, you know, midstream if you put enough energy to change it. And the other point, too, what we've been talking about, it's so easy as an NDEer, having had these experiences on the other side, to see and experience directly what intent can do, what thought can do. I mean, just with a thought, something is manifest. Boom, like that.
It's like pre-matter. A thought can be, it is pre-matter. It begins, it's the seed of creation, a thought.
Oh, absolutely. And it's so instantaneous. And then, of course, on this plane, it's hard to fathom that. What? You know?
Well, that's the beauty of it. On this plane, in the realm of what I like to call the realm of relativity, where literally everything is relative to every object, every idea, every life, every person is literally, we're in a relationship with something else. And so this idea, as Einstein called it, the universe of relativity, it literally is. But here in the universe of relativity, as opposed to the realm of the absolute, which as I like to say is in the another near-death experiencer term, in the natural presence of God, where you might want to also say that is heaven, whatever term you'd like to use to describe that, that those two, they're like polarities in which, and we move between those in life and death. We move between the two realms. But I would also say, too, we were talking about a lot of this earlier, too, where there's, I should mention this about this idea of an absolute truth is something I'd like to talk about a little bit later. But one of the things that was shown to me, and because I had the question about whether or not there is such a thing as truth, I know that in the New Age sort of thinking that a lot of people say that we can't really know the truth. And I would say that that's, in a sense, when you're in the realm of relativity, you're in the universe of that's relative, there's always, you're in relationship to something else that is different than you. You can't be up unless something else is down. You have to be, if you're rich, then somebody else, rich can only exist if there's someone else, say, for example, is poor. So there's always a polarity, and as our experience of life moves us through this continuum between the two polarities, we then end up going ahead and having a sense of, well, there can be no real truth because everybody's experience is different, everybody's perspective is different. Therefore, it's hard to say that there is any absolute truth at all, at least from the perspective of this physical universe. But from the perspective of the absolute, I believe that there are absolute truths. For example, the one absolute truth that God had shared with me was this idea, again, that we are all one. Because in the realm of the absolute, that is a fact. And no matter, nothing changes that. It doesn't change in time. No matter who you are or where you are, or if that truth exists. And so that's, I think, so important to bring this knowledge in, the fact that there are a few absolute truths. For one, another absolute truth is that we exist. The fact that we could say two words kind of proves it, and those two words are I am. And so we exist, God exists, we are one. Those are all three of the absolute truths that I think that people should really, try to wrap their their understanding around that, because those ideas will change not only the world, but they change personal lives. I've seen the power of this in my own life coming and helping me and shifting my own life. And we'll talk about this maybe in the next, I'll be on the 8th too, but I'd like to, talking about the spiritual depression and what I had gone through that kind of got me to the point of my own suicide or planning my suicide, was I had gotten so far away from that truth, from the absolute truth, that had driven me into this deep depression. And so I think in a sense the world itself is going through a depression and a collective depression. And we're seeing this manifested in the wars and in the strange behavior of a lot of people around the world and terrorism. I think, again, coming back to this idea, and I'll keep coming back to it, I think, during this conversation, of this idea that we are one, that will shift everything. If people coming to that one understanding will not only transform the world, but will transform your personal life, too.
Well, you know, Greg, I think it's wonderful that you keep repeating that, because I've been sharing it, too. But just to drive it in a little deeper, is that it's more than just a beautiful saying or metaphor for us, because we've actually experienced that directly. I know I certainly have, with my near-death experiences as well as my spiritually transformative experiences. I've actually known the truth of that we are one.
Did you have a life review? I know so many people have had life reviews where they'll see their life from not only their personal perspective, from the personality, but they'll see how their actions and word had affected others, but they'll see it from the perspective of the other person.
Exactly, yes, okay. Yep. Yes. And yet there's no judgment in it. It's just being aware and then being responsible. But I also like to keep emphasizing, indeed, we are all one, and that I've had the experience that I can say that from a place of knowing rather than just a beautiful hypothesis, as it were.
Well, I think the proof is in if you know, as I would say to people, if you know somebody who's had a near-death experience, ask them if they had, ask them about it, and oftentimes, not always, but a lot of people have had these past life reviews where they'll talk about having seen their lives from the perspective of others. In fact, I just talked to a man the other day who was talking about this. He said not only did he see how his words and his actions affected the people he interacted with directly, but he could see how those had reverberations down into other people and into other generations even. And so this idea, continuing the same thought again, that we are, as spiritual beings, intimately connected to people in ways that I think our intellect has a hard time coming to grasp with, but nonetheless, it's there. And I also have a strong sense that as we go along, there is perhaps this idea of speeding up our experiences. I wanted to talk about a little earlier too, this idea of time. Sometimes, the concept of time itself is beautiful because it prevents things from our intentions and desires from being reflected back to us too quickly. Oftentimes, it's a good idea to have a little bit of a buffer there so that when we put our intentions and desires into the garden, that we are given a little bit of time to say, okay, is this really what we want? Or to rethink things, because if things were reflected back too fast to us, we would be generating probably more certain experiences that we weren't ready for, that we probably aren't don't really want or need at the time. So this idea of time itself as a buffer this is in a way protects us from ourselves. I hope that makes sense in a little way.
It makes a lot of sense, absolutely, yes it does.
And so that was what was given to me as far as this idea. When I experienced, there's so much more I'd like to talk about as far as the Garden of Desire, but I think I'd like to leave that for the next interview because it gets into this idea of spirituality and depression, and so I'll leave that for then.
I think we might have a caller. Do we have a caller?
Hello.
Hello. Who
Hi
are
there.
We speaking to?
Chris Owen.
Hey, Chris. Wonderful. And you've been a guest on our show. Good to hear from you, lad. And in fact, I wanted to introduce you to Greg. So, Greg, look at this magic.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Greg?
Good.
I've been very intrigued by your show. And I wanted to throw in what I had. During my near-death experience, it was when I was 5 years old, which was 43 years ago, I had a few beings that came to me. One was a peacock, and when you said that it radiated love,
mm-hmm.
it radiated that's what I believed saved my life and brought me back to this world. The energy that was radiating from it. And at the end of my NDE, I had a medicine man, which kind of forced my soul back into my body.
Mm-hmm.
I've intuitively kind of had an apocalyptic sense of the whole NDE. And recently I've put it all together, what I think is going to happen, and I've done a lot of studying and research over the years, and in between, if you look at the bottom of the celestial globe, which is how the stars are in the sky, you see the two constellations in the south, which are Pavo, which means the peacock, and right next to it is Indus, which is the American Indian constellation. I'm led to believe that a comet will come through those two constellations, and I've had a lot of validation of this information. I've studied, like, for instance, the Hopi prophecies, which they stopped their ceremonies in the early 60s, right before I had this NDE. And also, I've been listening to certain scientists talk about comets and that they do periodically come through our solar system and that they do cause tremendous destruction. There's one that I listened to this week, and he was talking about what he believes was the Venus cataclysm, which is what Velikovsky talks about, and what also David Icke was a big fan of Velikovsky's, and it mentions that, you read in the Bible about the Great Flood, it mentions it raining for 40 days and 40 nights, and what Jim McKinney was saying is that that is perfectly consistent with going through the tail of a comet. If a planet goes through the tail of a comet, it causes what he calls a pollution event. It causes it to rain for a certain period of time. And he estimated that if, for instance, the Earth had gone through the comet Hale-Bopp's tail, which is a medium-sized comet, it would have rained on the Earth for 20 days.
Ooh, that's interesting. I know that there is a number of astronomers have predicted that there is a comet that we will pass on a close Earth orbit, I think in 2012, and it will come between us and some of our satellites that we have in orbit. That's how close they predict the satellite will coming. Is this something that you were thinking of, or could this
Well, there's a lot of interesting things. Now, this is the conspiracy theory aspect of it, which I've talked to Juliet about, is that countries of the world have been building these large telescopes on the South Pole. And it's very curious because there are no telescopes at the North Pole. But at the South Pole, there are some of the biggest telescopes in the world.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is like a 200-ton telescope. Now, when Comet McNaught came through, it came through this. There's been a lot of comets coming up from the south, which may be the satellites of a bigger comet. When Comet McNaught came through, it wasn't discovered. It was discovered by amateur astronomers down in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that happening when you've got the biggest telescopes in the world down there?
Mm.
How come they're not seeing this stuff? And there was another one, Comet Lovejoy, I believe, another guy in Australia, and he caught it on his Canon 350. So they named the comet after him. Why is it that these comets are coming through and they're not being spotted? There's like this conspiracy of silence down there. And, then also there's all kinds of other stuff, like, when Malachy Martin, Art Bell asked him about how come the Vatican is building these observatories, and he said, well, they're... According to their records, there's something that's on its way in, and they want to see it.
Well, I mean, when I originally started to write or decided to write this book, I had a strong feeling that I wouldn't have written this book if I didn't have a good feeling about our future. I have a really good feeling about the future of man and of humanity, I should say, I'd love to hear more about your story, and I think at some point Juliet and I will probably be contacting you. And I'd like to speak too a little bit more about some of the other people I've interviewed, and talk about what experiences they've had and visions they've had of the future too.
Why don't we give out your contact information to our listeners, Greg, so people can contact you, and also
okay.
They can always contact you through Toward the Light, too. I would always forward messages to you.
Right. I think the easiest way that they can write to me is through our business email, and they can contact me at Barbis, and that's B as in boy, A-R-B-I-S, at Sover, and that's SOVER.net. And I'm particularly interested in meeting with people like Chris who through a near-death experience, had visions of the future, and who would like to share them, and I'd like to include those in the book. Particularly, it's important, I think, that people had their visions during an NDE or directly after, rather than people who have had maybe dream prophecies or whatever. That's probably for another book that would be down the road. But right now I'm looking for people who had prophetic visions during a near-death experience. And like Chris, I'm very interested in picking, hearing other stories, because I think my sense of it is that no one has a monopoly on the truth yet, or knows exactly probably what's going to happen. That maybe all these people might have had like a little piece of the puzzle, and it's our job to come together and to talk about this like we are on your show, and compare notes. And I'm finding it amazing. I just did another interview a couple of days ago with a gentleman about my age, and I'm blown away by the similarities of our experience between his prophetic near-death experience and mine. He had three beings come to him. He called them three beings of light. His prophecies, he had a different perspective of 9/11, but it was clearly 9/11. He had seen people falling out of this cloud of smoke. And when 9/11 happened and he saw the people coming, leaving, falling out of the building, they were literally coming out of this cloud of smoke, and he realized that that was the vision that he had been shown during his NDE. And so it was interesting, same event, different perspective on the same event. And he was talking, too, about changes in coming up about what I should also add about my experience. I had a very strong feeling about migrations of people, and that was, again, part of this whole thing with the government collapsing, the infrastructure collapsing. And what had happened was, within his experience, he had said that he had a strong sense that something in the sea had changed and was causing people who lived on the coastlines to move and causing, again, mass migration. I asked him what he thought it might be, and he said he had a strong sense about the sea levels rising, because it particularly came to him that this was something preventable, that humans had control over this, that we had a chance to do something about it, that we failed, and now we're paying the price of this misjudgment. Whereas I think with Chris's vision about the comet or the asteroid or whatever that would be coming through, there's not much we can do about that. In this other gentleman's visions, the changes in the Earth changes that were happening, and certainly in my visions too, we have complete control over it. And so I think I'd be very happy to hear from other people who had had visions. I hope that our show doesn't influence them. I'd like to have them come forward and just talk honestly about what they had seen and was shown too.
Well, there's just one more thing I want to say before I let go, Greg and Julia.
Sure.
If you read the Hopi literature about the different calamities that ended, according to the Hopis, they've got it recorded that the Earth has been gone through four of these big calamities, and that we're about to ready to go through another one like this.
Mm.
And also, if you read the Bible,
yeah, I was just thinking about that.
The thing is that they do put one part in there, and they say that they make the connection between the so-called wickedness of men,
mm-hmm,
and these punishments. And what you were saying, that you know how we create our own reality, I think it's possible that if the people of the world create enough negative energy, that they're in a way that they're calling these things in. Now, and if they create the love vibration, then they will be immune to these kind of things. That's the only thing that I would like to, you know. So in a way, that they could be preventable. Toss that in, because
that's a really good point. I mean,
yeah.
At what point do we? I mean, how powerful? I know we're powerful spiritual beings that control, you know, our experience, and just, you know, exactly what is the extent of our influence over events around us. That's a really good point, and I honestly, I don't have the answer to that. What I was told, though, and what I feel that is accurate, is some events, like, let's say, for example, this comet, or say a tornado or a hurricane or a volcano going off, these events, at least on a personal level, we have an opportunity to choose how we would interact with those events. You know, for example, people might choose to move away from an active volcano. So on a personal level, you could choose to either be involved in an event that could potentially cause your death or not. And I think these things all happen on a level of consciousness, but a lot of it happens below the level of consciousness, so we're not aware we're involved with it. And that was a very clear feeling I got from watching The Garden of Desire, that all of this was happening at a level that for most people was far below the level of consciousness. It seeps out in a lot of different ways, and it's funny how that happens. It comes to people individually in dreams, but collectively, we'll start to see a gestalt forming, and I mean this in
yes.
sort of, say, for example,
point.
Like Chris is talking about these comments and so forth. Well, suddenly, if there's a potential of this happening, at some level we are aware of it, and therefore you might see movies about comets hitting the Earth, 20 or 30 movies suddenly made about this, or, you know, you'll see movies coming out on specific topics that are relevant to certain potential, and these are sort of, I think it's like our awareness is leaking into consciousness, the subconscious awareness is trying to connect to us and let us know and make us our consciousness aware of these probabilities and possibilities.
One thing I would like to add to that too is that knowing that all of this stuff is going on and knowing about the possibilities and things that could take place, I firmly feel that if we raise our vibrational frequency enough into love, that we can actually affect how damaging or how much something could potentially impact us. Also, David Icke, bless him, and everything that he's written when he's written about all of these sinister and really scary things that are going on, which I happen to resonate with what he's saying, because I've seen it. I see it all the time. Mm-hmm. But he keeps pointing out it doesn't have to be this way. If we change our minds and if we actually move into love, we can counter all that through love, not through opposition, but through love, through moving into the frequency of love. So that's why I think it is really important to be aware of this stuff, but also aware of the fact that it doesn't have to be this way.
Well, I think this, yeah, and going back to what you had said and what Chris was saying too, it's certainly, when you take a look at the power of love, we saw in Jesus the kind of miracles that one man was able to perform.
Well, I have
a really strong sense. In fact, when I started, right after my near-death experience, I started talking to people about it, and I was really surprised how often people would say, well, you know, I had something just like that happen to me. And so I was really curious to try to figure out, you know, how many, what percentage of people in the world had sort of a similar transformative experience. And so I went and did a little bit of research, and I found out from the, I guess there was a number of polls done, if I remember right, there was a survey in 1998 that was done by both the Gallup poll, who said that 15% of the United States citizens had gone through some kind of near-death experience. I know the Gallup has done a number of polls similar to this, and some showed, I think, as low as 7% or something like that. But it was a 1980 poll that was conducted that showed that 15% of the people in the United States had gone through some kind of NDE. And if you figure there's 300 million people in the United States, that's 45 million near-death experiencers. And if you have the world population of around 6.5 billion, I think that comes out to some 975 million people a day on the planet who have had a near-death experience. And the near-death experience is only one of seven types of different transformative experiences. And another survey that was done in 1998 said that the number of U.S. citizens reporting all types of mystical or religious experiences came to about 40%, and if you multiply that number times the entire world population, you end up with something like 2.6 billion people who have had some kind of notable, transcendent, or transformative experience at least once in their life. And I can tell you, in interviewing near-death experiencers, I almost inevitably, and I almost without exception, each one of the people I've talked to talks about how the power of love in their life and how important it was for them to try to integrate and assimilate and use this and really try to love people unconditionally and then use that power for positive change in the world. And so if you have, what is it, 2.6 billion people all working together, channeling that energy, who knows what's possible? Could it be possible that we can stop a volcano from erupting or move a comet and have it avoid hitting the Earth? You know, I don't know, but
I believe
yes, possible.
I believe yes. I really believe yes about that. And wow, this is so exciting and such a powerful point. And I can't believe we're already at the end of this transmission of Toward the Light. We've just got one more minute, and I want to once again invite people, if you have had a prophetic near-death experience, please contact Greg Sola. And the email again is Barbis, B as in brother, A-R, B as in brother, I-S, at, and what was the rest of it again?
Oh, it's Barbis at Sover, S-O-V-E-R, .net.
So that's S as in silly, O, V as in Victor,
E-R. Yes. I'm sorry. I don't think I probably finished getting my email address out
Sola.
Before.
Net.
And so that's the best way to contact me. And my name is Greg Sola, and it's spelled S-O-U-L-A, Sol with an A on the end.
Wonderful name.
I look forward to hearing from anybody who wants to share their experience.
And also, Greg will have his own page on towardthelight.org, so if anyone is confused about how to contact them, you can always go to towardthelight.org and find Greg there as well. And, of course, I'll be sure he gets all the messages. So, again, if you've had a prophetic near-death experience, we are seeking people who've had prophetic NDE to share their experiences. And this has been absolutely wonderful. We will have Greg back on again next week to talk about his near-death experience and suicide, and we're going to be getting into some of the spiritual aspects of going through these tremendous changes and what they do and how they affect our lives. It's really wonderful having you, Greg. And
well, thank you. I enjoyed being on the program.
Oh, it's great, and I think we'll get a lot of good response. And I want to remind everyone that it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. We will talk to you next week, once again talking with Greg Sola about suicide and near-death experiences next week, the 8th of July, on Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. Everyone have a wonderful week. Blessings and light. And we will speak to you next week. Until then, only love prevails. Cheerio for now.